The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, Manchester special. City usher in a new order while United have a very happy Monday. We salute the Mad Manx. Elsewhere, relegation, grown men in tears, and the sad end of Avram Grant taking players down like a lift operator at China White's. Abroad, a big day for Lille. The title's theirs to lose. No, they're 13th, actually. A flock of Portuguese in the Europa League final, but is it worth a gander? And why Samp Palermo was the crying game, and not just because in the end Samp showed us their bollocks. All of that plus posts, etc. in Football Weekly. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another week in Podland. Joining us here, Sean Ingle.
Hello.
Hi, Sean. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Who I called Barry Ingle only moments ago.
And I accused you of confusing me with Laura Ingle.
It's an easy mistake to make, Barry. And welcome on board, Philippe Auclair. How nice to see you.
How very nice to see you, Jimbo.
There you are, twinkling away. Lovely. Today, in keeping with recent shows, we're going to be littering the podcast with really glaring elementary mistakes. Collect them all and post them with an abusive message on the posting boards. First person to get all of them. Now, I'm not telling you how many there are, but plenty. Gets a special prize. Warning, may not actually receive a special prize.
I'd like to disassociate myself from all the glaring errors in Thursday's pod because I wasn't here.
That's true.
And when I listened to it, I spotted two of them.
We got one thing right anyway, Barry.
What was that?
You not being there. This just in, Man United are champions.
And deservedly so. They had the best home record. They, I thought, played the best football. All the challenges fell away in the end. And perhaps not a vintage United side, but they deserve to win the title.
Yeah. Kushat almost sent it to the final day, though, didn't he?
He didn't play well, and he looked very ring rusty. I don't know if it's the fact that he hasn't played much is an extenuating circumstance. If your job is to be a top-flight goalkeeper, surely you should be confident under a high ball, be able to kick the ball out. Properly.
Surely also goalkeepers, the whole thing about them is that they don't play much. Even when they're playing, they don't play much. So you have to be switched on. It's not like, you know, striker needing to have his match fitness so he can run up and down for 90
minutes. Well, if you're Rob Green, you play a lot. If you're Rob Green, you play
That's
a lot.
That's true.
But Kushak is almost certainly on his way out of Old Trafford. Right. Anyway, he's clearly not trusted to take the baton from Edwin van der Sar without dropping it.
Indeed. But let's paint in slightly broader brushstrokes then. Alan Hansen's contention that any one of the top four would have won with Sir Alex Ferguson as their manager. Do you agree?
No, I'm not too sure about that, actually.
I think City would have done. I think well done City winning the FA Cup final. But I think a manager with a stronger manager, a more progressive attacking manager, I think perhaps could have guided City to the title. Arsenal, I think, would have been dependent on injuries. I think they would have needed Van Persie and Fabregas to have been fit and in form all season. And Chelsea, possibly, although ageing side, I think they perhaps need a spring clean.
The other thing is that the squads that he's... I think it's a very strange point to make because Alex Ferguson is a squad builder as much as anything. If he inherited a squad like Arsenal's, which is very different from the type of squad he likes to have with him, I can't really see how he would do much better than
Arsene Wenger. I imagine that the point was that there, as much as there are flaws in the Arsenal lineup, and indeed in Chelsea's and perhaps less City's, there are flaws in this United squad which have been largely obscured by the fact that Sir Alex Ferguson has done such a brilliant job of keeping them focused, concentrated, and
which have been obscured as well. The work he's done before, because obviously what's been striking since the beginning of the season that even when Manchester United were not very good we all know that their record away from home is quite pathetic, really. It's only slightly better than Blackpool's. It's the worst since 1976-77 for a champion. But it seemed that he had already instilled this kind of spirit, which meant that when one player was not quite functioning, another could step in. And we saw that with, for example, with Dimitar Berbatov at the beginning of the season. Nani, who was there as well when Rooney was having a difficult time, then Rooney coming, then Hernandez coming. I mean, and that is something that was instilled, I think, before the beginning of the season. And you could say, I've read it actually somewhere, I'm nicking this from somebody, I'm sure, that the main strength of United were the weaknesses of his rivals. And I think that's... But that shouldn't deter. I think it's a remarkably good team.
One doesn't want to be churlish.
Indeed. And I think one thing which has been forgotten...
Barry wants to be churlish, sorry. Yeah.
If you actually take in the results of the last 4 or 5 years, Manchester United is the best team in the world, which everybody talks about Barcelona. Yeah. If you take in terms of results, consistency, number of titles won in the league and in Europe, presence in the final phase of the Champions League.
Probably in terms of passes completed, if you take it in the last 5 minutes at Ewood Park as well.
Yeah. No, but yeah. My point is not a moot point, I think.
What did you make of that last 5 minutes, United?
Austria against West Germany.
And Ireland against Holland. But that could come back to bite Blackburn, and I hope it does. They just give up. We're happy to play out for the draw.
Right. Well, a point against Man United, you don't think? We'll see, because it's very delicate now. Five teams within 1 point in the relegation battle. We'll come on to that in a second or two. The 19th title, league title for Man United, which, of course, puts them ahead of Liverpool, who have 18, Arsenal, who have 13, and a team called Ryan Giggs, who has 12 on his own. Extraordinary.
And 32 in total, if I'm not mistaken, which is equal to the number of titles won by Pelé in official tournaments, so which is a world record.
Wow.
That's absolutely astounding.
Sorry, 32 what?
Honours.
32 honours, yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Mm. For Ryan Giggs, individually.
Matt G. Williams says, who from the current United team would you swap for the treble team?
I think you would stick, I think Vidic would be in there. I think Ferdinand too.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I think the midfield, though, in 99 was stronger. Although, interestingly, that treble team are probably going to have, assuming United get some points against Blackpool, they I think, only got 79 points when they won the league, and this United side will have accumulated more points despite their poor away record.
One of the big differences was that the midfield of United of the year of the treble was a midfield that also produced a lot of goals, whereas this season they've produced hardly any. Almost all the goals have been scored either by Chicharito, Rooney, Berbatov, or Nani, who is an attacker, or the defenders, and the midfield has contributed very, very little. I think you would take the midfield from 1999 almost en bloc, really.
Well, you would, absolutely. I think only the two centre-halves, possibly. You know, Hernandez-Rooney versus Cole.
Seriously, you're suggesting David May wouldn't get in?
That's still one of my favourite images of that winning the Champions League in 99, him clamouring on board, waving. It'd be the equivalent of Jacob Steinberg perhaps coming in when, you know, if we ever won a Stetsonian. That's really harsh.
But Jacob wrote a great little window into the Ingle side.
He wrote a great piece on West Ham, which we'll come on to later.
Right. In your Sony vision, who is it there holding the trophy aloft?
Oh, it's you, Jim. It's you and Parry. Of course it is.
We won the Sports Industry Award for Best Website last week, and not only was I not invited to the ceremony, I wasn't even told we were nominated.
Right.
As the second longest serving member of staff. I thought that was quite...
Are you? Who's the longest? Is it Sean there? Oh. You went along, didn't you, Sean?
I did.
Oh, he did. Himself and James Darrett went along.
All right.
Free booze, hobnobbing with celebrity boxers and Sky Sports news presenters, and poor old Baz, no, didn't get a look in.
I bet you missed nothing, Barry. Listen, that's not the only top event that Sean Ingle's been to of late, Barry, because you were at the FA Cup like a kind of virtual supporter.
No, I went along, yeah, with a bunch of guys from Opta.
From
Opta.
That must have been sparkling conversation.
Unfortunately, it's Onal Markin or Jonathan Wilson. Neither of them were there, so we couldn't talk chalkboards and tactics. But we were talking about some really nerdy stuff. But the game, it was a good atmosphere and not a great game. I think I was probably the only person at about half two on Wembley Way over the age of 18 that wasn't, absolutely refreshed.
Right.
It was boisterous and good humour too, though.
For City, it's been hailed as an epochal win. The game didn't really come to life. Was that because of Stoke, do you think?
I mean, I thought City played very well in the first half, dominated, had lots of chances. First 25 minutes of the second half, nothing went on really, apart from Kevin Jones' one-on-one. But then Mancini finally made the change, brought on Adam Johnson, and almost immediately Torre scored. I thought Stoke were disappointing. It's interesting, on the way back I was chatting to a bunch of Stoke fans and they said, we've done so well to get here and yet we didn't really even go for it. Now, I think Matthew Everton being injured didn't help, but City were just too strong.
Do you think the occasion got to them?
Well, I don't know, it's hard though, because if you look at it logically, none of the Stoke players will get into Manchester City's first team and perhaps not even on the bench. I mean, City are a much stronger side, so and they imposed their will. Stoke didn't really. I mean, some of Stoke's tactics, the long throws and the long free kicks. We talk about them a lot, but it's a bit like rolling the eight ball. You hope the ball lands your way and you get a little bit of luck, and that didn't happen on Saturday.
Yeah.
What is he talking about?
the
magic eight ball.
The magic eight ball.
I thought he meant pool, kiss pool or something.
Yeah.
The other thing was that the
harder game.
The problem they had as well is that you know, they rely on dead ball situations so much, and Jermaine Pennant had a real stinker in terms of delivery.
In terms of delivery, I thought in terms of possession, he played quite well. But
no, absolutely. When he had the ball in his feet and he did some pretty decent things with it, even though most of his dribbling was towards his own camp. But his delivery from free kicks was very, very poor indeed. And on the other hand, you have to say that Stoke have met there a team that has got an extremely strong centre-half partnership, plus Mika Richards as well, who did extremely well every time the ball was propelled in the box.
There's no shame in losing to a team that have, to all intents and purposes, bought the trophy, whatever your views on whether that's a good or a bad thing. But I'd say a lot of Stoke players have woken up yesterday morning very disappointed that they didn't do themselves justice.
Well, the good news is they have a chance to put that right on Tuesday in the Premier League.
So they must be really looking forward to that.
Yeah, if they win that, how silly would they feel?
I don't think they feel silly. They just feel fed up.
Right.
You know, they didn't give a good account of themselves.
No. Okay. That's coming up on Tuesday. It would see, if Man City win that game, it would see them move past Arsenal into third place, pushing Arsenal into the Champions League preliminaries. We'll talk more about that in a second. Quick word, though, about Mario Balotelli. His performance a little bit more Roger Melli than Balotelli at the final whistle.
I was going to say for Balotelli, I think he was my man of the match. And one thing I was looking at particularly was his movement, which I've never been seen so good this season. And it was not just he pulled up a few tricks, the back heel that led to the goal, this superb shot that Sorensen, you know, got in the top corner. But what was really impressive is tactically how disciplined he was and how he was constantly trying to force Jermaine Pennant to go back by going in the middle and really interplaying with Kolarov and Silva and Tevez absolutely beautifully, and sometimes striking back 40 yards to get the ball back for his team. It was a really excellent performance by Balotelli.
He nearly lost it a couple of times. There was a time where, you know, he ran into Huth's arm, I think, and made a big deal of it.
Into Huth's arm. It's like people who suddenly put themselves in front of a Kalashnikov or something like that.
And after that, there was a couple other times where Stoke clearly tried to niggle him. They put this foot in, and he held it together. And I think perhaps Balotelli earlier in the season would have responded a bit more to Huth.
No, credit to him. And a great post-match interview, not only because he, you know, said a rude word, but also because it was just fantastic to see a footballer saying, you know, I've actually not had a good season at all. I've not been all that.
Yeah. Can we just also I'd like to make a point. I make it after every FA Cup final. I'm absolutely annoyed by the fact that the FA think it's necessary to have a really cheap fourth-rate tenor to sing Abide With Me, which is just such a magnificent hymn, and then have a fourth-rate soprano absolutely slaughtering the God Save the Queen.
You're when right. It should and you be were about available the fans. As well, Philippe. No?
Sorry?
And you were available as well.
And I was available. And the other thing as well is that they started to play this really awful music before kickoff when the stadium was absolutely white hot with two of the best sets of fans in the country who managed to drown out the PA of Wembley. So well done, Stoke City and Manchester City fans. And FA, please go back to the real tradition of the FA Cup.
Was it Black Eyed? Was it them again?
Oh, it was awful.
Let's not even mention them by name, but I think we all know the band we're talking about.
But back in 1974, Bruce Forsyth was led the crowd in Abide By Me. And he had the sort of nice to see you, to see you nice. And you kind of, like, would you want someone similar this time around?
Yeah.
Perhaps you, Jimbo, could have led the way. I mean, you've done it in the Champions League.
Who is responsible for this horrible idea of bringing those cheap singers to do this? I mean, cheap, they're probably not cheap at all, but they're really cheap because they can't sing.
And
they're awful.
City fans should be congratulated as well for staying behind after the game to applaud their own players, think about what they've done, and just, you know, add to the gaiety of the occasion. And not leave the stadium half empty for when Manchester City were collecting their
like the pot. Arsenal fans did when their poor players were trying to do a lap of honour at the Emirates after their brave. They came close to getting a victory, didn't they, against Aston Villa?
Well, I was at the game, and I think that your view of it differs slightly from mine.
Right.
I don't think they came close to anything.
All right. Still a plucky finale to the season.
The Arsenal.
Is this the lowest point of Arsene Wenger's reign?
Yeah, undoubtedly so.
Can it get lower?
Yes, if Manchester City leapfrog them into third place.
Yep.
I mean, the official attendance at the Emirates was announced yesterday as being capacity, or just a couple of hundred shy of capacity, and you could hear raucous laughter because there were obviously counting season ticket holders who hadn't bothered to turn up because there was a lot of empty seats.
At the very moment that the announcer gave the figure for the game and for the season, the chants started 6%, you're having a laugh, which was the chant that was reprised by the whole ground.
Referring to the price increase.
I was next to one of the, in the press box, but next to one of the alleyways where the fans are quite close to us. One of them walked to me and say, 60,000, look at these empty seats. This is a lie, this is a lie. It's the lowest point in Arsene Wenger's career at Arsenal. It's also one of the lowest points in terms of the relationship between the fans and the club I have ever experienced, and I mean ever experienced. The disillusion is so deep. It's crazy when you look at it because, the team had some great moments this year. They challenged for the title and for the titles for a long time. They beat Barcelona in one of the best games of the season at the Emirates. They beat Manchester United just last week. And then you have this feeling of complete, the world is just a big gaping hole, waiting to swallow me.
And playing contrarian for a second, they spent less money than any other side in the top six. So to actually, perhaps finish third or fourth, it's, in the grand scheme of things, it's not the worst season in the world, is it?
If you're their bank manager, but if you're their fan, you probably want them to spend some of
that. No, absolutely. And you look at their record since the Birmingham game, I think they've only won three times.
Including against Leyton Orient in the FA Cup.
Exactly, and it suggests a team that are just mentally, as people have said before, incredibly fragile.
Yesterday kind of summed up all their problems in a nutshell. Fabregas wasn't playing because he was injured. He actually looked quite embarrassed at the prospect of having to do this lap of appreciation. Did that even take place in the end?
Yeah, it took place, yeah.
All right.
What was the reaction, Philippe?
The people who had stayed behind actually clapped the team and, did what they could. It was very polite and they tried, some of the people actually started a few chants, but most of the people had already left the ground before, which I think is, I must say, I found it quite unforgivable from the fans' point of view, because there were some players there who deserved, a big round of applause. I was thinking of Thomas Vermaelen, for example, coming back and playing very, very well indeed after having been injured for so long.
Do you think he played very well?
I thought as the game went on, I think second half he was terrific, absolutely terrific, yes. Okay.
The 6% refers to the
6.5 price hike.
In the season tickets.
Yeah, and also that there was a small march before the ground down Blackstock Road, which was directed at the Arsenal board, Stan Kroenke and so forth. And
was that from a pub people were going to be in anyway to the football match they were going to attend anyway? One of those protests?
It was one of those protests. But nevertheless,
but still,
it took place.
On the march.
And yeah, Gunners on the march are on the walk.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's not very nice at the moment.
We should give a bit of credit to Aston Villa here.
Yeah, it was two smashing goals from Benton. He's been a great signing for them, I think he scored 8 and 15 since he joined, and people were kind of balking at the price at the time, but he's just a natural finisher, and that's all he does, and Arsenal could really do with someone like him, because yesterday, same again, they were trying to Arsenal the ball into the net rather than everyone eschewing the option of taking shots in favour of passing it on to the next player, and it's just woeful.
And Darren Bent, probably the most underrated striker in the country. It's a goal every two games, I think, since he started his career in the Premier League. But the other thing, not only is he lethal when he's got in front of goal, but his movement is absolutely magnificent.
It's interesting because I used to speak to guys at Spurs when he was there and they'd say, fantastic when the ball's over the top, fantastic when he has a bit of space. But if you're trying to play the ball into him and you want him to be, hold up and to be intricate with it, that's where he failed. So you have to case of using him the right way. And I think Spurs weren't able to do that. But certainly the way Villa play was a bit more fast on the counter-attack, it suits his game.
Philippe, just to finish off this mammoth part one, just give us an update on the health of Gerard Houllier, who I imagine we won't be seeing back at Villa Park, and who might we be seeing in charge of Villa next season?
I've spoken to Gerard a couple of times very recently. His health is getting better and better. I think he really wants to go out because he's been ordered basically by his doctors just to stay put in his home and not to take things really easy. But he's itching to go out again and obviously he misses football terribly. He's asking news about everything, everybody, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And in his mind, yes, I think that there is a drive to come back.
But he can't come back, can he?
I honestly don't think so.
Who do you think will be taking over?
Well, I think I was very interested at the Footballer of the Year dinner on Thursday to see Juan Rafa Benitez doing the rounds and making sure everybody knew he was available.
Absolutely. Although at that same dinner, you had Carlo Ancelotti was there. Many of the managers were. I mean, it's what they do, along with a few players too. I think if Steve McClaren is interested, whether he'll be offered it is another matter.
Is there something behind this Rafa Benitez talk beyond the fact that you saw him on the football writers' dinner or not?
Well, he wants to go back into football.
Uh-huh.
His family is very, very happily settled in England and doesn't want to move. He wants to stay there. He wants to come back to the Premier League. Which clubs can he come to, can he go to? He said very clearly in an interview during the weekend that he was not necessarily interested in Premier League football or winning trophies, but in taking over a team and developing it. And I look at it and I'm thinking Villa is absolutely, absolutely right. It's a team that's got huge potential, has got some very good players, young players as well. And, you know, it's a ticket that would be quite appealing, I think, to many people.
All right.
The Ingle tuxedo was really working overtime last week, wasn't it? I wasn't at the football writers.
Oh, football writers, yeah.
I was at the cinema watching a documentary about West Indian cricket.
Oh, really? Fire in Babylon. Mm. I went to a documentary last week. I saw Pina, the Wim Wenders, the 3D extravaganza about the dead German choreographer of the experimental ballet. Oh,
what?
My word.
Sounds like something Mrs. Jimbo would be into, all right.
Yeah, although I have to say that...
How bad was it?
No, I mean...
Had you done something to...
her staging of the
best
of the Rite
3D
of Spring
I've ever
is
seen.
Fantastic.
Sorry?
Her staging Pina Bausch of the Rite of Spring is absolutely extraordinary.
Exactly.
I'm curious to know how you dirtied your bib to end up having to go to that. Must have been bad.
In part two today, we'll be talking about the relegation battle after this. Relegation. Wigan put the hammers down. And there you go. Avram Grant, Millwall legend. More fly-by action there.
Excellent.
And more grown men in tears. Avram Grant sacked minutes after the... Bizarre scenes, this. You wait till the end of the season, then all of a sudden you're in a hurry to get rid of him. Surely the horse is very much bolted by that point.
Well, they should have appointed him in the first place, but then they had a chance around Christmas time, early January, to get someone else in. I think he's never got the defence right. His team selection, he's chopped and changed all over the place. And I've said it before on this pod, I don't think they're the worst team in the Premier League, but he's taken them and they'll finish bottom.
Mm. In his defence, probably the
you're
fact
always,
that...
You're always defending him, Jimbo. Why can't
I'm
he just...
Saying the,
why
saying
can't he just say
picture.
He wasn't very
I'm just
good.
Saying, from a manager's point of view, having a club publicly offloading you halfway through the season didn't do much for his hold over the dressing room, I'm guessing. However, it is true he has spent 66 of
Jimbo,
the past 70 weeks in the bottom three of the Premier
Jimbo,
League.
Jimbo, you say that. Remember Claudio Ranieri?
Yeah.
I think Claudio Ranieri did a far better job. He knew he was a dead man walking, and he did a far better job than Avram Grant did at West Ham.
All right. Ranieri, a better manager than Avram Grant.
Yeah, what a surprise.
All right. Has a manager ever taken two teams down from the Premier League in consecutive seasons?
I don't think so. He has, this is a Jacob Steinberg stat, West Ham have thrown away 22 points this season from winning positions.
That's a lot of points to throw away. Woof. Among those touted as possible replacements, Chris Hughton, Sam Allardyce, Steve McClaren, and even Paolo Di Canio. That would be interesting.
That would be great. I think, isn't Neil Warnock the favourite at the moment? Because when I was at that...
Isn't there a bit of previous between West Ham and Neil Warnock?
Well, there is, because Sheffield United went down at the expense of... West Ham stayed up at the expense of Sheffield United. That time there was the palaver over Tevez and Mascherano.
And he took them to court.
But I met two QPR fans outside the cinema at that cricket thing the other night. Oh. And they seemed to be fairly certain that... Warnock is going to be out of a job soon.
And who's going to be coming in there, Philippe?
I don't know. I find that
biscuit touting Claudio Ranieri.
What can you say?
Cookies ahoy.
I mean, I know QPR is a crazy club, but that beats absolutely everything. It's unbelievable. Especially when you know that the most important player in that team's promotion campaign has been Adel Taarabt. And that Adel Taarabt is only playing the way he is playing because of Neil Warnock. Warnock has understood very quickly what kind of rapport he needed to have with this young man who is, you know, a bit troubled sometimes, and has given him tremendous confidence, giving him a completely free rein in the team. He's a luxury player name me teams in which there are luxury players in these days. There aren't any left. I mean, Riquelme, maybe, somewhere in Argentina. If Warnock goes, there's no way Tarap is going to stay.
You know, people criticise Gold and Sullivan at West Ham as a pair of charlatans, but go to QPR, you've got Eccleston, Fabio Briatore, and that Indian guy, who, you know,
Mittal.
A three-headed beast who are not the most savoury characters in the world by any stretch of the imagination.
Right, West Ham down anyway in the Championship, awfully sad to see. And is who it? Else is going to go? You have five teams.
Sorry, why is it sad?
It's always sad to see supporters
crying,
red-eyed.
Is it?
Yeah. Come
really?
On,
do you think so?
Feel some love.
Barry's got a big beaming smile on his face right now.
I think it's funny.
Right.
It's just life. It's funny. It's that's what happens in football. And as right. long as it's not you.
They knew the risks.
It's funny.
Yeah. All right. Five teams in 1 point. Good Lord. Blackburn and Wolves on 40 each. And then you've got Birmingham, Blackpool and Wigan. Ooh, fractionally separated by goal difference. One goal of goal difference between each one. And it all comes down to this final weekend. Now, you were saying earlier, Barry, that you think the Blackburn not going for it in the final 5-10 minutes against Man United could come back and bite them in the bottom.
Yeah, I hope it does.
They're at Wolves.
Yeah, personally, I'd prefer to see Wolves stay up just because I'm a fan of Mick McCarthy's and because our Uber boss is a Wolves fan and I have to toady up to him. And I even said to him at a do we were at last week that I would happily surrender the 3 points, you know, if it meant Wolves stayed up and see, you know, and they duly beat Sunderland. But anyway, yeah, Blackburn, their new owners took over. They were giving it all this about finishing in the top five or pushing for Champions League promotion. They quite clearly haven't got a clue what they're doing. Sack Sam Allardyce, who would have, I would say, kept Blackburn in the Premier League quite comfortably. And now, after that performance on Saturday against Manchester United, I just found it a bit nauseating, and it would be sort of karmic if they went down.
What about Birmingham then, the other teams currently suffering from the curse of the Carling Cup final? A 2-0 defeat at home to Fulham. What on earth happened there?
And they were so so tepid, so just lifeless. I mean, they've only won two games, I think, since that Carling Cup final victory. And I mean, I thought they would be fine. They looked like they were heading comfortably into mid-table, but they just don't seem to have any spark.
And they're going to be at Spurs next week.
They are, and Spurs are going for the Europa League.
They've now decided they want to be in the Europa League.
Well, it looks like it, after their win at Liverpool.
Yeah,
and Birmingham have got the joint worst record away from home
Birmingham with
West Ham. Yeah.
Right. Okay, it's all very exciting. So West Ham down, two more places, and as I say, five teams. With just a point separating them for those final two places. Blackpool currently on the wrong side of the divide, but only on goal difference. And their game with Bolton, a reminder of exactly why so many people want them to stay up in the Premier League.
It was an absolute thriller. It could have finished. I mean, I think I was going to say it could have finished like 8-8, but I think Blackpool scored from almost every shot they had on target. Yeah, but they've still got it all to do. They've conceded 23 goals in 7 games against the top 4 sides so far. They've lost all 7 of those. So to go to Old Trafford and to win would be obviously a huge ask. Although, of course, West Ham did it a few years back when they needed to stay up. So
Blackpool could lose and still stay up because the goal difference is so between Wolves, Birmingham, Blackpool, Wigan. It's like from minus 19 to minus 22.
Well, the Wolves have an extra point, don't they?
But, Wolves and Blackburn have an extra point. Yeah. Birmingham are on the same points, but only one goal of goal difference better. So if Birmingham get hammered at White Hart Lane, then...
Can somebody actually tell me if two teams are on the same number of points with the same goal difference?
It goes to goals scored.
Goals scored, in which case Blackpool stays up.
Indeed.
So probably good.
So who do you think is going down there? West Ham are down. Wigan had that big victory over West Ham, but they're still there alongside Blackpool on 39 points.
I mean, it's very, very difficult to call. I mean,
Wigan are at Stoke, Blackpool are at Man United, Birmingham are at Spurs, and Wolves and Blackburn, the two teams with a point margin over the bottom three, are playing each other.
The bookies are suggesting that it's Wigan and Blackpool, and if you wanted Blackburn to go down, I think they're 14-1 against, which is unlikely, but it's a big price. And I'd like to see Blackpool and Wigan stay up. I think Martinez is a is a very good, has done a very good job in difficult circumstances. He hasn't got much money, hasn't got much support there. I liked how he described the last 10 minutes as the closest thing to Labour he's ever likely to experience. He's a good guy, and I'd like to see Wigan and Blackpool start because they play the game the right way.
All right.
Well, I was talking to Paul Doyle, by the way, this morning, and he would like it to be known that he, as long ago as Christmas, he was saying that Birmingham would go down and got roundly abused for saying so by their fans who were scoffing at the notion that they'd be in trouble.
No, right. He wrote a very good blog on it, which you can go and find. I've backed at the start of the season West Ham, Birmingham and Blackburn and Wolves, so hopefully three from four.
You're like one of those arms speculators in the middle of a conflict, aren't you? Like somebody who invests in landmines at the first sign of some conflict.
And who are you? Princess Diana.
Exactly. That's very much... Yeah, yeah. Well done to Newcastle. Not only did their neighbours Sunderland put in yet another abject display, but they got a point at Stamford Bridge. We, though, move on. Let's dial up Sid Lowe in Spain. Sid Lowe in Spain. Hello, Sid.
Hello, James. Can you hear me?
I can do, actually. Yeah, I can.
Yeah, I'm just on a metro. I'm 30 seconds away from the next stop where I will get off and hopefully be able to speak to you properly.
All right. Which stop is that, Sid?
Well, I'm currently at Alonso Martinez and I'm about to get off at Gregorio Marañón, which is in the middle of Madrid.
Oh, OK. I'm seeing your red light pulsing now on our map of the Madrid metro. Where
you're
are you
going? Sorry?
What do you do? We've got you. Sid, how's the stop going?
Right, I'm off and I'm trying to walk myself into a semi-quiet bit of the metro, but even the semi-quiet bits of this metro are not very quiet.
All right, then. This is going so well.
Through, but I'm just going to try and nudge myself into a corner in the hope that I can hear you better.
All right, lovely. Right. Oh, all right, OK, there's so much to talk about, Sid. First of all, our apologies for not being in touch on Thursday. Yeah, and but in the meantime, I understand that Barcelona won the title.
Yeah, they did. They got the draw that they needed in Valencia against Levante. They then drew again this weekend against Deportivo, which means, I think I'm right in saying that Real Madrid are only 4 points behind, so it's league on. Oh, no, it's not. Sorry. No, they've already won it.
CR7 has definitively sealed the Pichichi race.
Yeah. He got, in the last three games, he's got 4, 3, and 2 goals. He's now on 38 for the season, which is equal to the all-time best, which was secured by Telmo Zarra and also Hugo Sanchez, who both got 38 in the season. So this is historic. It's been called 39 by Marca for reasons that we've been into before and are quite tedious, basically because of a disputed goal. But he's on 38 for the season, which is an extraordinary record level with those two. I think he'll probably score as well in the final week of the season because Real Madrid play at home against Almeria. And of course, because the league title's gone, Real Madrid's kind of one objective, their one goal at the moment is to help Ronaldo win this Pichichi Award and break these records. So it's giving them something to play for. So I think I'd be very surprised if he doesn't add another goal next weekend.
Now, at the bottom of the Liga, Hercules and Almeria already down. And then you've got, 7 teams with 3 points between them. And so that's the big question on the final day then, is it?
Yeah, well, 7 teams and 3 points between them, but actually it's only it's 6 teams that can take that final spot.
Ah.
Levante's points total can't be caught by more than one team because there's 2 of them face each other on the final day. That's Real Sociedad face Getafe on the final day. We're in a strange situation as well, which I think I'm right in saying may even have happened last year, but with fewer teams. This year there's 6 teams that can take that final place, but all of them have their destiny in their own hands. In other words, all of them know that a victory would secure survival. Of course, they can't all win because there are those 2 teams facing each other. It's Zaragoza and Getafe look the most likely to be dragged into it, but Osasuna, Real Sociedad certainly could as well. And the interesting one really is Mallorca, who thought they were safe weeks ago and probably would have been had it not been a season which the total points is looking like it's going to be very high indeed down the bottom. Mallorca, who were completely safe, who haven't been in a relegation zone all year, who haven't been lower than 11th until this weekend, could actually find themselves as the third relegated team.
All right. Sid, the other news which is just breaking as we made our way into the pod was UEFA announcing that Sergio Busquets will not be facing any disciplinary proceedings over the accusations that he called Marcelo a monkey.
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing to say here is, of course, that this is far too important and far too serious an issue to kind of act frivolously about and say, oh, well, they should have done this and they should have done that, because I just don't know as yet what the kind of examinations process was from UEFA, to what extent they took certain bits of evidence on board and other bits of evidence not on board. There are a couple of interesting things, one of which is UEFA say they have turned down Real Madrid's request which despite Madrid's claim to the contrary, suggests that this was only brought before them because Real Madrid brought it before them. And then, of course, you've got that other question, which is, has this been dealt with seriously enough by UEFA? Now, as I say, we don't know the nature of the evidence presented before them because the video evidence is based on lip reading, which we can't be 100% sure about. Well, I must say, I thought the explanation that Barcelona put forward very late in the day, very belatedly, was pretty unconvincing. They claimed that he hadn't said mono, he'd actually said mucho morro, which basically means, you know, you cheeky sod. Frankly, I wasn't at all convinced by that, but of course we don't know for sure. I can only assume that UEFA have spoken to both Busquets and Marcelo. I also wonder whether UEFA have been slightly influenced in this by not wanting to be seen to be taking action on the say-so of another club. I wonder if this had come to them, you know, independently rather than via Real Madrid, maybe the response would have been different. I don't know.
I guess, have you already heard the reaction in Madrid? Because I guess all my friends in Madrid were all telling me he's going to get 4 or 5 games suspension, and there will be another conspiracy theory, which is the only reason that he didn't get the suspension, despite Marcelo's affidavit and the images that were given by Catalan television, is the fact that he plays for Barcelona, UEFA's darlings. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it, that we're in a situation with this and with a number of other things that UEFA are in a position, I think, where no matter what they do, they're going to be accused. If they were to have banned Sergio Busquets, then of course the response in Barcelona would have very much been they've done it because Real Madrid have put them up to it, and this proves that Jose Mourinho's moaning and whining and talk of conspiracy actually pays off occasionally, because every now and again you force UEFA into acting against them. Then the flip side of it is, now that he hasn't been banned Busquets or hasn't had any action taken against him, this is more ammunition for the Madrid side of things to say, well, this just proves that UEFA are in Barcelona's side. They're not going to do anything against them. They're not going to act even when something really, really potentially quite unpleasant has happened. So, as I say, it's a really difficult one to judge because we don't know the nature of the evidence. We don't know exactly what the process is. But on the face of it, at least, it looks pretty bad, I think, on the face of it, for UEFA to have taken no action against something that they themselves have made quite a lot of noise about.
Speaking of making a lot of noise, we'd better let you
train coming in.
Get back to your journey. Many thanks for that. We'll catch up with you at the start of the next week. There you go, Sid Lowe in a train station in Madrid. Of course, I think it might not be conspiracy, because I think UEFA just have never shown much appetite for having the nasty concept of racism associated with their football, and particularly with the Champions League final. I think they're just quite happy to get the subject out of this way as fast as possible.
They've given loads of fines. They've suspended clubs already for racist offences. And if it comes from, excuse me, but from a player who has got UNICEF across his shirt and who is supposed to be a paragon of virtue in world football, surely that was a good moment to put an example, especially in a league where racism is rife in the stands.
I don't think they've taken a strong position on racism before, and I think that they may well have been extremely keen to get the story out of the way as fast as possible. But there you go. I mean, I completely agree with you.
They have issued fines in the past, but they've always been for derisory amounts of money, like, you know, a couple of hundred quid fining a club.
Part three, everybody. DG of Herne Hill says, we mentioned for Ajax winning the Dutch League and what amounted to a final match playoff for the title against 20. It was a cracking game. Then.
To add to the catalogue of errors, isn't that some kind of new record as well for the Dutch
League? I don't know if catalogue's fair. Pamphlet, maybe. Anyway, isn't that a new
small
record?
Small flyer.
Right.
I was wondering if it was not their 30th title, and that constituted a new record.
It was their 30th title.
In the Eredivisie.
Not as many as Rangers, says producer Ben.
Who also wrapped up the SPL yesterday, and my favourite player, Kyle Lafferty, scored a hat-trick against Kilmarnock. As Rangers beat them 5-1. Celtic beat, I think, Motherwell 4-0, but it wasn't enough.
No. In other Euro football news, Portugal this week, Wednesday, will have the all-Portuguese Europa League final between Porto and Braga in Dublin, which... Yeah,
it's a shame, I guess. I think it'll be a good final, and it'll be lovely to see. I mean, we don't see a lot of Porto here because it's not a lot of Portuguese league shown in Britain. But it's
there
a shame
is where I live, Brixton.
But huge Portuguese. But I'm sure many of the Dublin Dubliners and the landlords and the bar owners would have liked it to have been a Liverpool v someone final just for the
Irish
economy.
No, this would be much more entertaining.
You would have had thousands of people descending on Dublin for that. I don't think you'll get that for this final.
Oh, but in football terms, sure,
it'll be a good game.
Yeah, will it?
Well, I think Braga will try and keep it quite tight, but Porto,
they're crazy.
Well, they're not crazy, but they've shown that they can really strong force going forward, and it'll be interesting. I mean, I think Villas Boas has said he's going to stay for another season.
Mm.
It'll be interesting if they win that league and say someone like Chelsea came knocking with an awful lot of money, whether he might change his mind.
Interesting. Well, we'll have a bit more on that game on Thursday after it's indeed been played in France.
Can I just say another thing about Porto, because it's also valid for France what is going to happen. The problem yet again is going to be that Porto will probably have to sell, Falcao, Hulk. And this team, which is probably at the moment, I think, amongst the six best in Europe, will not be amongst the six best in Europe when they actually go into the Champions League, in the same way that the future French champion. And I must really bow very, very low to Mr. Engel here, because you had a bet on Lille being champions, didn't you? A long time ago. Nobody would have made it, but they're nearly there. Not
three
quite.
Clear at the top. They have a game in hand. Marseille slipped up at the weekend, drawing 2-2 with Lorient.
Yeah, and Didier Deschamps, after the 2-2 draw at Lorient, more or less admitted that was it.
Oh, really?
That Marseille wouldn't be quite able to catch up with Lille.
Didier.
It was a bit of a... I mean, this being said, this was also confirmation that Lorient is a team that was to be reckoned with. And again, same thing, they will probably lose their best players because precisely they've had a very decent season, will finish in the top 10. But Kevin Gamero, who is actually amongst the best goal scorers and also for the title of best players in the French league, I don't know if they're going to keep him. Actually, no. I know that they're not going to keep him.
Because he's worth it.
Mm. And the same for Almad Fitano as well, with his striking partner. So it's the problem that Porto will have. This is why the transition was made. Is unfortunately a problem that will be felt even more strongly at Lille.
Two questions, Philippe. One, Eden Hazard.
He's good.
Where's he going?
Eden Hazard good. Oh, that was nearly a good pun.
What?
Well, don't you remember the single? No. Oh, man.
What a shame.
Eden Hazard? No, he's a good. Ebenezer good.
Eden Hazard good, yeah.
Eden's good, right. I thought you were saying Eden Hazard, like somebody with a bulimia.
No, he's absolutely terrific.
Right.
He's absolutely terrific.
Eden Hazard.
Yeah. And one of our great hopes in the current Belgian constitutional crisis is that Wallonie is going to be reattached to France, and then we're going to get Marouane Fellaini and Eden Hazard.
Ah.
Yeah. And,
right.
We could. And maybe even Kompany. I mean, he's from Brussels, but we could maybe get 85% of Kompany and he could play for...
Just invade. Invade the country.
That's what they want us
to
do.
The way to do it. All right.
No, Eden Hazard, absolutely, absolutely superb.
Where, Philippe?
Where? At the moment, he's on... he was on Arsenal's books. He's been scouted by every top club in Europe. So I can't tell you. All I can tell you is going to go for a lot of money. All I hope is that he's going to be sold for enough money that Lille is going to hang on to the player who's been, for me, their best player, is Gervinho.
Okay.
Scored a lot of goals, loads of assists. And funnily enough, he seems to be the unsung man of that Lille team, because everybody talks about Hazard, who is so spectacular, so technical, so skillful, scores these wonderful goals, and Moussa Sow, the goal machine. But the guy who's really made them tick this season is Moussa Sow. And of course, the coach Rudy Garcia.
All right.
So it's really remarkable what they've done, because don't forget they won the French Cup as well against PSG. So they're on course for a double. I mean, Lille used to be a very big team in the 50s.
Yeah.
And they're coming back to that. But there's also other things which are very interesting at the moment.
Yeah, are Monaco going to get relegated?
Exactly. And this weekend, very sad news. Lens, everybody was expecting it. Gervais Martel, the chairman, has said he would stay in place. But Lens is definitely relegated. Monaco,
what's sad about that?
Because it's the best supported team in France. When I say best supported, it's the best kind of supporters. The Bollard is always full when they play. They're absolutely magnificent. They're sort of English style, what people like to think of English style supporters. And they will be, they will stay with the club when they go down. Unfortunately, it hasn't happened. And if you look, it's still very tight. I mean, it's almost as tight as the situation as in England, because you've got club like Nice, Brest, or Nancy, or Caen, maybe, can also go down. Yes, I know. I saw that smile,
Jim started.
Barry got excited when you had Nice next to Brest in the same sentence.
Yeah. Well, I say you can say Valenciennes, Toulouse, you know, even mathematically, you know, Bordeaux are not out of it, right, which is quite extraordinary, which shows you how tight things are. The other very good story...
How many games ago, sorry?
There are actually only two, but there are some teams which have got a game less than the others, which are Brest, for example. They're playing actually tonight. Against a very, very, very big game for both teams. But another remarkable story is the story of Sochaux this season.
Barry's just wondering if Brest are going to stay up. Yeah?
Jesus Christ, I'm trying to talk about football, seriously. And here they are with their, you know, three penny punts.
Well, he started it.
They're going to ask you about Nancy boys in a minute as well.
Yeah,
I actually have a proper
does
question.
Does Sochaux translate as so hot?
Yeah.
You know, things like that. I don't know. Try to find me with Auxerre. I'm sure you
can. Well, if you go from 15 to 17, it's nice breast Nancy.
If only Lille was down there, you could have nice little breast Nancy.
And you were mentioning Monaco.
Yes.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? In relegation zone, the team that was in the Champions League final 7 years ago.
Mm. Mind you, in Italy, there's a team that was in the Champions League preliminaries 9 months ago.
Yep.
And they're now in Serie B.
Yep.
Yeah. Should we hear more about that with James Horncastle? Horncastle?
Yes.
Hi, James. Milan won, yes. They did their big triumph at the San Siro business with the, 4-1 over Cagliari, yeah?
Yes.
Pippo Inzaghi was back on the field. Gattuso scored a goal. And everybody's bleeding, talking about Kevin Prince, bleeding Boateng, and his Prince, and his Michael Jackson impersonation.
Yeah, when he said he was going to do it, I didn't realise he was going to do it to such a great effect. You know, he got the costume, he got the jacket, the hat, and they made a whole stage. Talking about Inzaghi, someone who's just come back from a long-term knee injury, he was even seen dancing along on the sidelines, but it was a great rendition from Boateng, who's perhaps been one of Milan's best players this year, along with Thiago Silva and Zlatan Ibrahimovic. But I was just disappointed that after Boateng's moonwalk, he said that Ezequiel Lavezzi, the Napoli striker, said that he was going to raise that and go with he was going to put on a mini skirt and dye his hair blonde if Napoli qualified for the Champions League, which he didn't do, which was a shame.
That is a pity. I have to say,
it's quite an odd thing to suggest. Udinese's manager Francesco Guidolin said he would do the moonwalk now, so it's becoming a bit of a trend.
Yeah,
bandwagon.
It's the hot new dance, isn't it? This moonwalking business. I must admit, I did think that Prince Boateng might have been a little bit more, you know, hot, because you go to kind of teenage discos, you see kids are dressing up doing moonwalking like they've just discovered.
When do you go to teenage discos?
Well, I have sometimes been, not teenage, but this is all going to sound very, very wrong, but I have been to
already.
My son's school disco. I was helping to pick up broken teeth from the floor after. Bizarrely, it was a 2-hour disco, and halfway through they thought, let's get a team of breakdancers in to do a demonstration. Fantastic. It was a great demonstration, but you can imagine what the boys spent the next hour trying to do with no training. Health and safety. Sorry about that, James.
Jimbo, when you were in your sort of, you know, 80s prime and you were listening to...
Hang on, James.
...to Your Rage and the like, were you ever...
I never listened to A Rage. Will
body,
you stop that
Frankie
now?
Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Were you ever into the body popping and the...
As I could see. I can pop and lock, actually.
Go on, then.
It's not a visual format, is it, a podcast?
But Barry could give you some kind of...
Hey, I could. Wait. I could do the paper review in robotics.
Do it on Friday.
That'd be fantastic.
That's one for the listeners.
Yeah.
And you beatbox as well?
No.
I'm the one with the shameful erasure past. I went to see them in the SFX in Dublin and enjoyed it.
What's the most shameful gig you've ever been to, James Horncastle, assuming you're still there?
I've been to lots of bad Italian gigs.
Ah.
Yes. There's the Italian rapper Fabri Fibra, who famously, I think he's like Italy's Eminem, who sings, Si mangia pasta fatti in casa. In Italia, which kind of translates as "you can eat homemade pasta in Italy." It's a terrible lyric.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. Kevin Prince Boateng, anyway, not the only big name on the slide No. With the moonwalk, yeah. This weekend, because, well, Juve lost at Parma. And
Chivinco
how,
again.
Yeah, Chivinco.
I saw a stat which was something like 21 goals from Parma this season have been scored by former Juventus players, which is 57% of their total, which is fairly bad.
I think it's even 22, actually. But, yeah, he was the player who they let go because he was too small, etc., which I must admit I did think they might be right at the time. But he's been fantastic for them.
That's the goal of the weekend.
It was a great goal. Very similar, actually, to Robinho's in the Milan victory over Cagliari. But anyway, that defeat at Parma means that Juventus are almost certain to not even get into the Europa League. It's a total, total disaster. And the headline was, total disaster, everyone's to blame. But I think everyone's clear that it's that man Del Neri.
I think it's a little harsh. I mean, the thing with Juventus is that, what is it now? If they sack Del Neri, he'll be there. His replacement will probably be their seventh coach in 7 years. They've gone through 3-4 presidents since Calciopoli. You look at Milan since Berlusconi took charge, they've only had 10 coaches. I think Inter in the same time have had something like 24. Now Juventus are falling in the middle, and you'd have to say they're probably approaching that sort of terrible Inter moment of going through a massive drought without any silverware. But yes, not very good, and they're all kicking off. Agnelli, like you said last week about the TV rights, it's going to be an interesting summer for Juventus.
Well, he threatened to go and play in Ligue 1 or the Premier League, which probably comes as news to the Premier League. Sampdoria, it's even more catastrophic for them. Started off the season in the Champions League preliminaries, and now they're relegated.
This has only happened 8 times in 40 years, I think, that a team has qualified for Europe and then qualified for Serie B in one fell swoop. But quite a season of mixed a weekend of mixed emotions for Roberto Mancini, because while he won the FA Cup with Man City, he also saw the team of his heart get relegated almost 20 years to the day after they won that historic Scudetto together.
Yeah.
But, La Gazzetta dello Sport likened this weekend to 4 weddings and a funeral. I don't know if you saw this, where, because Napoli qualified for the Champions League for the first time in 21 years. The trio of Cesena, Bologna, and Lecce all sort of secured their top flight survival. But the funeral is, of course, for Samp. And weirdly, as La Repubblica pointed out this morning, always seems to happen in years that feature double numbers, like 66 and 77, 99 and 2011. But coincidences aside, I think the writing was sadly on the wall for Samp.
All right. Well, anyway, it was heartbreaking scenes. Sampdoria had to win. They scored what they thought was the opener, Pozzi. But then he was declared wrongly offside, and he runs over to the linesman, and he's shaking his hands. There's this look of desperation, and he sinks to his knees in front of the linesman saying, please, reverse your decision. Oh, it was heartbreaking stuff, Sean. Nobody could watch that and remain unmoved.
Was he offside?
No, he wasn't.
Oof. Perfectly valid goal.
Yeah.
Then Mikkeli put Palermo ahead in first half stoppage time.
Yeah.
Samp, to their credit, got back into it. But I think it was 4 minutes from time, Maurizio Pinilla scored Palermo's winner and literally put the final nail in their coffin.
But not literally. I should just say he didn't literally do that.
But Palermo didn't celebrate, did they? That was kind of a nice gesture.
Yeah.
They didn't want to sort of take any sort of pride out of someone else's fall.
Right. And then Angelo Palomba doing his one-man salute to the fans at the end.
Oh, that was tragic.
Bittersweet, then. Bittersweet weekend in Serie A. And next weekend, the big finale, when we find out if it's Lazio or Udinese going into the Champions League alongside Inter Milan. And
another moonwalk from Guidolin this time.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Fantastic stuff. Thank you very much, James.
Thank you.
Nice one. Speak to you soon.
Ciao for now.
That's about it, then, for today's pod. And yet, there's one more thing we'd like to discuss.
There's two.
Oh, okay, two more things.
Well, I've decided, and there's a bit of a theory going around that Fulham are trying to sabotage. It looks like they're going to get the Europa League spot for finishing top of the Fair Play League. It's
We're not top, but the highest placed team that's not already qualified for Europe.
Yes, it's between them and Blackpool.
Yes,
basically.
That's exciting.
But I did a bit of research, and I noticed that Fulham have got 10 yellow cards in their last 2 matches, which is the same amount as they've got in their previous nine games before
wow.
that.
Wow. So you think they might be just trying to really wreck their disciplinary record so as not to go into the Europa
yes.
League? What's the difference between them and Blackpool in terms of disciplinary record?
It's only about one red card, I think.
Wow. So it's all coming down to this... how well they behave in the final game.
Well, Fulham are at home to Arsenal and Blackpool are away to Manchester United reserves, so could
Blackpool in Europe.
But you could have Birmingham and Blackpool, two teams not in the top flight.
And Stoke as well. I mean, Stoke will still be up, but wow.
That's going to be wonders for the UEFA coefficient, that is.
Yeah.
I think we should also congratulate Robbie Fowler and Steve McManaman for...
Andrew Tullett.
Pardon?
Well, I know he's there anyway.
And Luis Figo.
And Luis Figo.
Franco Baresi, Barthez.
And that singer, the one who did...
Craig David.
Craig David.
Mm. Yeah, for participating in that game.
Charity game, isn't
Ramzan
it?
Ramzan Kadyrov in Grozny in Chechnya.
Mm.
So they, at the invitation, and presumably loads of big bags of cash changed hands, they went to play in an exhibition match, which, amazingly, Kadyrov's team won 5-2, despite the fact that they were playing against all these superstars.
It's shameful, really. I mean, you look at Kadyrov, you look at how the WikiLeaks stuff and was reported, and you know the sort of element, the torture and everything else that goes on in that state, and you just think it's...
It is extraordinary that people, with the amount of information that's out there, quote from Steve McManaman saying, lots of countries have bad political situations, but we're not here for that. We're just here to play football.
Yeah, I mean, Robbie Fowler was very quick to show off his T-shirt supporting the docker workers in Liverpool, but clearly isn't too bothered about human rights in Chechnya because it's not Liverpool. And Craig David, like, I mean, it was a Wednesday. Normally he'd be making love on a Wednesday. But... He forsook that so he could just take the Kadyrov shekel. And now, presumably, he's chilling.
All right, well, that's it then for today. Many thanks, Philippe Auclair, Barry Glendenning, and Sean Ingle, and to our contributors from on the Overseas Leagues, James Horcastle and Sid Lowe there, and producer Ben, back from holiday. All right. Listeners, we'll be back on Monday. What day of the week is it today? Oh, okay. Listeners will be back on Thursday, so do join us then. For now, from all of us. I don't know. It's a long season. And
how could you not know it's Monday?
Because I'm here on a Monday and a Thursday, and I just wasn't sure which one it was. For a second, I was thinking, oh, God, do I have to...
No, I can understand how you get mixed up between, say, Wednesday and Thursday or Tuesday and Wednesday, even, but everyone knows when it's bloody Monday.
The weekend's just been played. There's loads of football. So the weekend's just happened. There's been loads of football.
All right, then. But I have your word that it's Monday today. Okay, so we'll be back on Thursday, listeners. Bye for now.
Great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.